he was in the Pierre Hotel during the Nixon transition. He knew Lyndon Johnson when Johnson was a senator. He had worked for President Eisenhower, was his Eisenhower's favorite staff member. And he was Nixon's first appointee. So there he was in the Pierre Hotel, Nixon's first appointee. And Nixon had said something the night before about foreign policy, critical of President Johnson. And Johnson had called Bryce, who was the only person he felt comfortable calling, and was just raising hell with him. Didn't you know that there's only one president at a time, and I'm still the president? He was shouting and carrying on, and Bryce was respectfully listening. And about that moment, Sally came in, Studebaker, and said, Mr. Harlow, President Eisenhower is on the phone, would like to talk with you. So he had President Eisenhower on hold, and President Johnson shouting at him. And a moment later, Larry Higbee, who was Bob Haldeman's assistant, ran in and said, Mr. Harlow, President-elect Nixon wants to see you immediately. So he may have been the only man who ever had the president talking with him, the former president on hold, and the president-elect expecting to see him within seconds.
Politics in Washington is a highly dynamic business. Despite the best attempts by congressmen, senators, and presidents of both parties to hold on to power forever, eventually, everything in Washington yields to its successor in the form of a transition. In the 6 decades that Bryce Harlow worked in Washington politics, he not only witnessed his share of transitions, he played a starring role in several of them. In 1969, when former Vice President Nixon became President-elect Nixon, Bryce Harlow was the first person he turned to for help with his transition into office. His relationship with Harlow went all the way back to their days in the Eisenhower White House, and the two remained close ever since. Bryce's daughter, Peggy, recalled working for her father during Nixon's transition into office. She described what it was like both for her father and for herself.
The best part was that teeny-weeny little room in the Hotel Pierre where we were sitting jowl to jowl, cheek to cheek, with my father's desk against one window, mine against another, and then a big overstuffed chair where my father interviewed people constantly. Everything else was covered with paper. Everything was just incredibly busy. And right down the hall, we had all the highfalutin members of the administration, including the president-elect himself. So you had people wandering in and out all the time, the Henry Kissingers of the world, the Bob Haldemans, and the president himself, or the president-elect himself.
The president-elect reasoned that Harlow's long Washington experience and impeccable reputation among both parties would help ensure a smooth transition and a strong beginning for his new administration. Former Nixon speechwriter Pat Buchanan described why Harlow's presence was so critical for both the new president and for the less experienced staffers that came in with him.
Bryce had been through the entire Eisenhower administration. He knew people who had gone before that we didn't know. We didn't know Sam Rayburn and folks like that when we came in. And so Bryce had a sense of the history of the White House, the history of the Congress, the people, how they worked, and how the whole system worked, whereas a lot of us who were younger came in with a lot of energy and fire, and Bryce was a cooling saucer for that.
During the transition, Harlow worked with the incoming staffers, for many of whom this would be their first time working in the White House. He felt it was important to meet with them, to prepare them for how different even the small tasks would be once they were doing them from the White House. Nixon speechwriter William Safire remembered one such meeting.
As soon as Nixon became president, I guess Nixon asked Bryce to brief the new appointees, the new White House aides. So Haldeman called a meeting at the Hotel Pierre in New York, which was the transition headquarters. And Bryce sat down with must have been 20 or so of the new staff, and included Kissinger and Ehrlichman and Pat Moynihan and Arthur Burns, and he looked around the room, and he told us on getting calls and making calls from the White House, there's no such thing as a private call. That a call from the White House, I'm paraphrasing here, is a call from the high levels of an administration. It's not a private call, and it carries influence and it carries enormous weight, more than you think.
Throughout the tumultuous presidency of Richard Nixon, Harlow was the logical person to call on whenever a transition needed to be made. One such occasion happened when Vice President Agnew was forced to resign during the building Watergate scandal. Although Harlow had gone back to Procter & Gamble by that time, President Nixon called him back along with his longtime friend and colleague Mel Laird to work through those difficult days for his administration. Former Nixon counselor George Shultz recalled.
Then when Nixon got into all of his Watergate troubles, he persuaded Bryce and Mel to come back. They were both very, very savvy people, to come back to the White House and help work through problems. And they loyally, patriotically did that. And they worked through the process of Agnew's resignation. Those were tough times. Lots of people would have said, why do I want to come back and get myself involved in such a mess? But Bryce stepped up to the plate and he came back and he was helpful.
Following Nixon's resignation, Gerald Ford, of course, assumed the presidency. Although Harlow was back working for Procter & Gamble during most of Ford's administration, the new president continued to rely on him for counsel during important political decisions. Vice President Dick Cheney served as President Ford's chief of staff during that period. The vice president recalled an important assignment that Ford gave to him and how he was influenced heavily by Bryce Harlow in executing the task.
He was involved in 1974 when Ford became president. A couple of years later, by 1976, I was Ford's chief of staff, and Nelson Rockefeller had withdrawn from the ticket, wasn't going to run in 76, so we had to find a new running mate, and the president called me down to the Oval Office and gave me the assignment of setting up a search process to find a running mate for him for the 76 campaign. And he had a couple pieces of paper, yellow legal-sized tablets, that he pulled out of the drawer and showed me. And it was the process he had used in 74. When he became president in August of 74, when Nixon resigned, the first thing he had to do was pick the vice president under the 25th Amendment. That's when he picked Rockefeller. But what he wanted me to do was to follow the same basic procedure that he'd used then. And he had these papers that laid out the names of all the various would-be vice presidents on the Republican side. And then on down the other side, he listed all the qualities that he thought were important. And then he'd rated each of the candidates on each of those qualities. And I asked him who'd done that work for him, who put that chart together, and he said, Bryce Harlow.
Bryce Harlow never again served in an official capacity in the White House after that period. However, future occupants of the Oval Office continued to seek his counsel for the rest of his life. In fact, his services were in demand by presidents right up until his death from emphysema in 1987. His friend and former colleague from the Eisenhower administration, Ed McCabe, remembered visiting him in the hospital at the very end of his life. Mr. McCabe recalled a phone call that Harlow received in the hospital, which served as a reminder of how much he was still valued by people at the very top.
I was in the hospital room. Sally was there. The phone rang. It was an emissary from George Bush thanking Bryce for some handiwork that he had done on a statement that turned it out to be just right for Bush, and something that nobody could get it right. And there he was on his deathbed, literally. He died, you know, within days of that. But that's just a reminder of it. So the very day he died, he was still sought after by the people who made a difference.
In the following segment, we will explore some final thoughts on the influential career of Bryce Harlow.